The Best of Times Radio Hour, live on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel, a show dedicated to seniors and boomers in Northwest Louisiana. Here's your host, Gary Kaligas.
Good morning, radio listeners. I'm Gary Kaligas, the publisher of The Best of Times, the only magazine and radio show for mature adults in Northwest Louisiana. I do thank you for listening to our show today and also thanking those who might be listening via the internet at www.710keel.com. Also thanking those who might be listening via the Keel application on their Apple or Android devices. We do thank you if you're also listening via our podcast on Apple Podcast or at our website at www.thebestoftimesnews.com. We do thank AARP Louisiana and A-Bears, Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer for being the exclusive sponsors of this radio show to provide you with beneficial information each and every Saturday morning. In just a few minutes, we're going to learn about near-death experiences. So stay to the show for some very interesting information. It is Saturday, March the 23rd, and we are broadcasting our radio show from the studios of News Radio 710 Kiel, a Town Square media station here in wonderful Shreveport, Louisiana. However, today's show is not live and has been pre-recorded, so we will be unable to accept call-in questions and comments from our loyal radio listeners. Be sure to pick up the March-April issue of The Best of Times in one of our 270 distribution locations. We do thank you for the many compliments about a magazine. We do appreciate hearing from you. Remember, if you're unable to find a printed copy at one of our 270 distribution locations, you can always visit our popular website at www.thebestoftimesnews.com to view both current and past issues for the past 8 years on our website. In addition, you can view and download the 2024 Silver Pages Senior Resource Directory. In addition, you can listen to previously broadcast shows here on the Best of Times Radio Hour. Speaking of the 2024 Silver Pages, it is now available for pickup at most of our 270 distribution locations. We have printed over 20,000 copies, and they were placed out beginning on March the 1st. Some distribution locations have very few or no issues left, but you can always visit our website at www.thebestoftimesnews.com to view the current 2024 Silver Pages, or you can even visit our app on the Silver Pages. Each and every month, the Best of Times sends out a newsletter blast to over 73,000 email addresses of seniors and boomers located in Caddo and Bossier parishes. It provides them with additional information about educational articles, discounts, coupons, a contest, and of course, more news that you can use. It also links to our current issue as well as our current Silver Pages. If you want to receive this free newsletter, the only thing you have to do is visit our website at www.thebestoftimesnews.com and subscribe by entering your email address. And each and every month, you'll be receiving this particular free newsletter. Great news, our friends at Ernest Arlene's has brought back the Best of Times special dinner each and every Thursday from 4:30 p.m. to closing, with fabulous meals at highly discounted price with entertainment as well as valet parking. It is highly recommended due to the popularity of this Thursday night special to make advance reservations by calling 318-226-1325. Again, that's 318-226-1325. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Kiel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM at 710 Kiel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears, Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. Joining me on my show today is a very special guest, is Dr. Peter Boggs, who is a local allergist and immunologist in the Shreveport and Bossier area for many years. And I've asked Dr. Boggs to come on my radio show today to share his presentation that I heard several months ago regarding near-death experiences. I found it fascinating, and I think that all of my listeners out there in Radio Land will find it very fascinating. So thank you, Dr. Boggs, for joining us today here on the Best of Times Radio Hour.
Well, thank you.
So you've been interested in this for a long time, right? For about how long?
I would say about 10 years.
10 years. And you mentioned to our group, why is it important that everybody know about this topic?
Well, because, first of all, they occur and people have them. What happened is back in the 70s, our advancement in resuscitation techniques began to become excellent. Prior to that, people who were near death died. There wasn't a lot of luck in resuscitation, but since then, things have changed. So now people who are experiencing death are awakened and revived and come back, and they tell us what happened after their experience of dying or during their experience.
So I was fascinated up until 1970, and that was because of new resuscitation techniques.
That's
and
correct.
And just think about that. Before that, there were none? There were some?
Well, there were some, but they weren't nearly as good as they are now.
Wow. So you mentioned that there's two types of near-death experiences, right?
There's a near-death experience where you actually are near death. You die and they are resuscitating you, and if they're not successful, you're gone. There's another type that's the experience is identical, but the problem is you're not near death. You're nowhere near death. You could have a near-death experience talking to me right now, and it would be exactly like what you would have had you been near death, except the near-death experience part is not there. The adventure that you have after it is, and it's identical.
Wow. And that was fascinating. But you said about 75% are near-death experience, but 25% is the near-death-like experience.
That's right.
As well. So who has these near-death experiences?
Well, everybody has them. Anybody can have them. About 17% of the critically ill people have them. Young people have them. There's even been a book written, Heaven is for Real, about a four-year-old boy who had one. So anyone can have them. It's estimated that 10 to 20 million people in the United States have had near-death experiences.
And we're going to talk. There's some of them like to tell people their stories and their situations, but others are don't, right?
Some do not like to tell them, and some don't. And sometimes people are reluctant to talk to their physicians about them. They talk to the nurses about them that are in the ICU with them, but they won't talk to the physician because they feel the physician may think, well, they may dismiss it as a drug effect, or they may dismiss it as maybe you had an emotional response or something.
Or a mental condition, right?
Right. And they might call the psychiatrist in to see you. But it's a real thing.
Well, one statement that you made to the group, which was fascinating to me, I want you to emphasize this one. You said surveys have shown that 75% of atheists change their perspective on religion after having a near-death experience.
That's right. And that comes from the work of Dr. Grayson, who was head of psychiatry at the University of Virginia, and he's been a leader in the International Association for Near-Death Studies. They did a wonderful review of the literature of about 30 years of literature on this topic. So that comes from Dr. Grayson's studies.
So I want to ask you, one other thing that you could convey to us at this group, and hope you're okay to convey it, you had one, right?
I did.
Wow. How many years ago was that?
That was about 10 years ago.
Wow. That became your interest after
that?
Oh,
that stirred me up quite a bit. I mean, it was extraordinarily disruptive to me at the time that I had it. I had to do everything. I was in a meeting when I had it. I had a near-death-like experience.
Okay.
And I'm in the middle of a meeting. I'm not conducting the meeting. I'm just sitting off to the side when I had this. But it was, I had to struggle to not lose it. It was so emotional.
So you mentioned there's so much information, everyone, that he could convey today. We could probably talk 3 hours. But I thought your historical background of near-death experiences was quite interesting, because you mentioned in 420 B.C. Plato describes it, correct?
That's as I understand it. Plato did. The Egyptian Book of the Dead did in 400 B.C. Even the Tibetan Book of the Dead did it in 12 A.D. St. Paul's encounter on the road to Damascus in 62 A.D. has been considered by many to be a near-death-like experience.
And likewise, he was definitely an atheist and changed and converted at that point.
Absolutely. It made a big difference in his life.
Major difference. And then you mentioned that beginning in the 70s, it became more people started being resuscitated and they might have had these experiences, et cetera. So,
that's right. And Raymond Moody then wrote a book, Life After Life, in 1975. And he's the one that coined the term near-death experiences.
So tell our listeners, which I thought was fascinating, you went on in great detail about some of the common characteristics of a near-death experience.
Well, there are many, and one thing that's important is that not everyone has each of these things. They mix it like shuffling a deck of cards. Mm-hmm. So you could have one set of things. I may have a different set of things, but the common things are some people have a sense of being out of their body. It's not unusual for people who've had operating room death experiences to make observations about what they have observed when they were out of their body, and when they were when they reported to their physician what happened and they weren't believed, they turned around and said, "Well, why did you cuss the nurse out for this, that, or the other?" And
wow,
the doctor couldn't believe that. So it's a very real thing. It's highly emotional, as you can imagine. The communication is nonverbal that you get during this experience. It's like what we would call mental telepathy. Some people go down a dark tunnel before they get to a bright light. Other people go down a lighted tunnel. And they're not walking, they're just moving, but they're moving extraordinarily rapidly through that tunnel. They may encounter deceased loved ones. They may encounter religious people. Some people encounter God. Other people feel that they've encountered and had a conversation with Jesus. They seem to get, if they ask a question, they get all the answers at one time, flowed right through them like they've learned almost instantly, which is fascinating. And then they have a life review, many people do, where you go through each of the events that's occurred that's significant in your life. But the key is, it's not to punish you, it's to enlighten you, because not only do you see your side of the event, you see the other person's perspective, their perspective of the event. So you see both sides of this, which I think is just fascinating.
So in the scenario you mentioned also, sometimes you make a decision to return or not.
Sometimes you get to make that. Sometimes that decision is made for you. And people have been known to want to stay, but have been told that it's not their time to stay. Hmm. I know that when I had my experience, it was such a wonderful experience. I thought I was dying. And I said, "Well, gosh, if that's what's dying like, this is wonderful. And I could stay here forever."
Uh-huh.
And I'm sorry about that.
No, go ahead.
Okay. That was my telephone went off in my hearing aids there. Probably everybody could hear it. Where were we?
No, you were talking about the decision to return or not, and some people.
Oh yeah, when I had that, I thought about my family, and I said, "Hey, wait a minute! No, this is wonderful, and I would enjoy being here, but I can't leave. I have
can't
my
leave
family
the family
to think
at
about.
This point at this point in time." But the life review to me is fascinating. I mean, that probably was. Do more people have more of these common characteristics than other based upon the people that have reported? Do we know?
I didn't quite catch it because my phone went off and I didn't realize it was still talking in my ear.
Hey, I have the same problem with my phone as well. So do more people that have these experiences have one more than one of these characteristics, or is there a sense of more people feeling outside their body compared to a life review? Do we know? Any kind of stats done?
Probably the single most common going away feeling is the lack of fear of death.
Oh,
because the experience is so pleasant. It's filled with love, joy, and peace. And I know that I felt like somebody had put an IV in my arm and injected me with all three of those things. It was incredible. I've never, ever felt that way. And it lasted for about a week.
Wow. For a whole week.
Yeah. I could have danced. It was incredible.
One thing that you mentioned to our group, which I thought fascinating, that it's been reported that blind people can have these near-death experiences.
It has
Explain
been reported that.
That.
And sometimes they get sort of images as opposed to seeing like you and I see, but sometimes they see like you and I see. But then when their experience is over, they return to their pre-near-death visual state, so they're not seeing well.
You know, we don't need to go into great detail about it, but you also mentioned that some of these experiences can be harrowing experiences, right?
Oh, they can be, and particularly in people who suicide and have these experiences. They can be terrifying. I had a friend tell me that he had tried to commit suicide several times, and each time he had had a near-death experience, but every time he tried it, the experience became more and more terrifying. And the last one was so bad, he said, "I'll never try it again."
Wow. So that was a positive outcome. Definitely a positive outcome.
It was a positive outcome.
For the fear of the family. So, and quickly, we don't have a lot of time in this segment, but let's talk about, and you mentioned one of them, the positive effects is loss of fear of death. Wow.
Right.
That's one of the major ones, right?
It is.
I thought this, and, you know, there are many people that don't believe in life after death, but sometimes this strengthens the fact about life after death.
This
right?
does strengthen the fact of life after death, and the physicists have gotten into this, and they feel that we're in a dimensional world that we don't see the many other dimensions that are there. And that when we die, we actually transist into a different dimension than that we can be aware of where we are right now.
And most Christian religions believe that. I don't know that much about Muslim and Hindus and all the others, but I know that most Christian religions believe in life after death, right?
Right.
And the sense of purpose, I thought that was interesting, that has a new sense of purpose and mission after having one of these, right?
Sometimes we do, and sometimes you feel like the things that you valued before, particularly materialistic things, aren't as important to you now as they used to be. You may feel like you want to help other people more than you did before. In other words, you have a greater desire to serve people. Have a greater zest for life and appreciation for life. And certainly you can have either a deeper religious experience or you can have what they call a spirituality experience where you're not necessarily denominational, but you're believing and firmly believing, but you're not locked into any one denomination.
Yeah, there's about 50,000 denominations throughout the world these days. Choose your own or develop your own. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information. But now we're at our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and Hebert Sending Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 1017 FM and 710 Keel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 1017 FM at 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and Hebert Sending Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kaligas, and I do thank you for listening to our show today. Joining me on my show as a special guest is Dr. Peter Boggs, who is a local allergist and immunologist in the Shreveport and Bossier area for many, many years. I've asked Dr. Boggs to come on my show today to share an interesting presentation that I heard him give several months ago regarding near-death experiences, and I know that you're going to find it fascinating as I have. So thank you, Dr. Boggs, again for joining us today here on the Best of Times Radio Hour.
Thank you.
So continuing, I thought when you were mentioning the many positive effects of near-death experience, it was fascinating that when they have more zest for life afterwards, you would think they would be traumatic. Hopefully they weren't, but they have a more appreciation and zest for life as one of them, correct?
Absolutely.
And what about, would they more readily express feelings? They probably could see something, right?
I think they become more interested in people, in helping other people.
Wow.
The focus becomes more on that.
And maybe before they weren't as more?
Then they were. It wasn't that they weren't before, but it becomes much more of a dominating charge for them after this.
And they're probably, you mentioned to us that there's a heightened search for knowledge, so you want to grasp more information as much as you can, is that right? Did you have that syndrome?
Absolutely, and I don't know how many books I've read on this since then. Yes, I poured right into it because of the experience and because of the research that's been done. And there's an enormous amount of research out there.
Really, there has been.
That you can get into on even using your computer and going to Google and doing Google searches on near-death experiences.
I found
that. And the International Association for Near-Death Studies has a website with a ton of information on it.
So it's more prominent it has been in years. What got the impetus? More reports of it? More people willing to share it?
I think what started it off was Moody's book in 1975, and then the improved resuscitation techniques, and then people started talking about it. And when people start talking about this, it gets your attention. And so that got the attention of some researchers, and one thing led to another, and Dr. Grayson's group got involved with it a long time ago, and they've spun off different researchers in different areas, and they've done quite a bit of work over that period of time, and they're still at it.
Well, I'm happy that you brought this to our attention. I didn't think many of our people at our meeting were aware of this particular syndrome. They might have, but I didn't think about many.
Not. It's not something I'm going to be honest with you. I had seen Dr. Moody's book many years ago, mm-hmm. and just kind of read it with interest and just went on. And I had not had anybody report anything like that to me until 10 years ago when I had the good fortune of having an experience like this. And then I got highly interested in it and started reading everything I could on it.
But do you think that people that, and I think you mentioned this in your book, many people that have had this experience don't report it to anyone, right?
That's correct. And some people will come out of this and they'll start talking right away. Other people will take the position, well, they're going to think I'm crazy. They're going to discount this. They're not going to believe me, et cetera, so I won't talk about it. Then sometimes it takes a long time. For example, children who have this, may not say anything right away. And then little things come out over time where they say things that they remember they had, and it gets their parents' attention. And then they, a little more time may pass, and they say some other things, and then they may say some other things as time goes on.
So there's a reluctant, and I think you told us, too, that sometimes when people are scared to reveal this, is they might reflect that the loved one or the physician or the healthcare professional may think this person's having mental issues, right?
They may, but this is not a mental issue. It's not a side effect of a drug. It's not a brain dysfunction. There's a neurosurgeon from Harvard who had a near-death experience that was quite detailed and quite lengthy. It was 7 days long.
Wow.
He was about to die when he woke up. And he describes all of that in a great deal of detail. That's Eben Alexander, and he has a book out that the audience might want to read.
Okay. The name of the book is?
I think it's a neurosurgeon's experience with near-death.
Near-death experiences. So the other after effects is, as you mentioned, it does sometimes transform people, right?
Yes, and they talk about people being, well, more religious or more spiritual. They talk about people having more interest in helping people. They talk about the reduction in interest in materialism versus the interest in doing good for other people. So an increased concern for other people and their well-being.
You also mentioned that most suicidal near-death experience people don't attempt suicide again, right? So that's a BEFTA positive.
Well, some of them don't. Also, I have read that one technique that they have recommended that has worked on some suicide patients is if they get in that situation, if they will reach out and say, God, help me, it will turn the suicide situation off.
Wow.
And that's fascinating. They've had a number of reports of that.
Wow. The one thing that you mentioned, sadly, is that 65% of near-death experience marriages result in divorce. Why is that?
Yeah, that seems like a big number, but, you know, I didn't realize it, but 50% of the marriages today end in divorce.
50%?
So I was stunned when I saw the 65 until I saw the 50%, and I didn't realize that 50% of the marriages ended up in divorce.
I never thought of that stat. I was thinking
huge.
Of 20 or 30%. But
I would have guessed that, too.
Amazing. So the other one that you mentioned to us, you can the psychic phenomena of health abilities, that means what?
The what now?
You mentioned you reported there was a psychic phenomenon, the positive effect of having an NED.
Well, you can feel very good about life, very good about death, and not have the fear of death anymore. The feeling of, well, if you die, what's going to, you know, most people are afraid of death and dying. The death process may not be easy, but once you're aware of what the near-death experience reports, you transition into a different place that's much more joyful and peaceful and loving than words can even express.
What about those individuals? Hadn't there been individuals that said that after their near-death experience, they had some feeling of healing? They could heal? They had a healing phenomenon?
Some people have felt that they can heal, but
they've been touched by God.
I don't know what the percentage of that is. I have yet to encounter anyone like that felt like they had the power to heal people. But that has been reported.
Interesting. So the other one, let's mention the negative. I hate to always add those in there, but you know, you mentioned that horrific beings being seen, et cetera. in these near-death experiences, you can have a lot of negative things come up that people might or might not mention. And
that usually comes up in a suicide where they have the horrific experiences. Most people that have the near-death experiences have a much different
more positive yeah. experience
when they haven't tried to kill themselves.
that's a good point there as well. You want to give some examples of people that you mentioned to our group?
Well, yeah, there's a young man. There's a book, Heaven is for Real, named Colton Burbo, and he was 4 years old when he had an appendectomy. And during his appendectomy, he had a near-death experience. And after he woke up and he got home and a little time went by, he asked his dad one day, he said, "Dad, did you call your father Pop?" And he said, "Well, yes." He said, "How'd you know that?" He said, "Well, he's a really nice guy."
Oh, wow.
And so that got Dad's attention real quick, and because he'd been dead a long time. He was dead before Colton was born. And Dad went up to the attic and got a picture of Pop and brought it down. And it was a picture of Pop right before Pop died, when he was an older man. And when Colton looked at it, he said, "No, Dad, he didn't look like that." He said, "Nobody in heaven is old, and nobody wears glasses."
Wow.
So then he went on and he said, a little bit later, he looked at his mom one day and he said, "Mom, you know, I have two sisters." Whoa. And Mom says, "No, you have one sister." And she named the sister. And he said, "No, I have two sisters." Said, "One died in your tummy."
Oh.
And they had never told him that before he was born, they had lost a baby prematurely. And they did not know whether it was a boy or a girl. And they had not named it. So Dad decided he would trick him again. And he tricked him again, saying, "Well, what was her name?" And the little boy looked at him and said, "You didn't give her a name."
Whoa.
And he was right. And Dad also brought down another picture of Pop when Pop was a young man. And Colton says, "That's him."
Without glasses and a younger.
No. Yeah. And Dad was a preacher, so they would go around to different churches. And Colton had told him at one point that he had talked with Jesus. And so they'd see a picture on the wall of Jesus, and he'd ask Colton, he said, "Is that what Jesus looked like when you talked to him?" And Colton said, "No, he didn't look like that." And that went on for quite a while. And then one day they saw a picture, and Colton said, "That's him." And the story behind that is there was a young girl in a far distant town from them, didn't know them, no relationship to them whatsoever, who was a gifted artist. And at 4 years of age, she had a near-death-like experience where she saw visions and she talked to Jesus. And Jesus said, "I want you to paint your visions." Well, she started drawing with pencils, and then she started drawing with colored, and then colored pencils, and then paint, and then acrylics. And the next thing you know, after a number of years pass, she paints this very famous picture called The Prince of Peace, which is the most widely distributed picture of Jesus in the world today. And when Colton saw that picture, he said, "That's what he looked like."
Fascinating.
So it's fascinating that they both saw the same person.
Picture. Yeah. So the book is called?
That wasn't a book.
It no,
was,
no. It,
the
no,
picture
I
is
mean
called,
the picture, but.
Heaven is for Real.
Heaven is for Real.
It's by Colton Burpo's mom and dad.
Oh, wow. I've heard of it, but I've never read it. Yeah. I have heard of it. That's fascinating.
I've seen him interviewed on television. He's an adolescent now. But I've seen him interviewed on television. It's fascinating. He still remembers every bit of this.
Hmm. And it was a great experience for him as well at four years old.
Absolutely.
And how old is he now?
He's in his teens, late teens.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sure everybody's going to be Googling that person after we mentioned that as well.
Yeah.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information. But now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors and in country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, and Ram and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. And now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, standing country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kaligas. I do thank you for taking time to listen to our show today. Joining me on my show as a special guest is Dr. Peter Boggs, a local allergist in the Shreveport and Bossier City area, and I've asked Dr. Boggs to join us on our show to share a presentation that I heard him give several months ago regarding near-death experiences. I found it fascinating, and I'm sure you have as well. So thank you, Dr. Boggs, for taking time to be on my show today.
Thank you.
So let's mention, because I'm sure a lot of people say, well, I think I've had these, but I don't know if I have. So what are near-death experiences or not? And one thing I think you mentioned before, not mental illness, right?
They're not mental illnesses, and they're not hallucinations. Hallucinations are very short. You don't remember them very long, and they're just fleeting, and then they're poorly organized, and you lose them. You just don't recall them. Near-death experiences are recalled in extreme detail for as long as decades, and they impact people's personalities, their attitudes and their values and their behavior sometimes, whereas hallucinations don't. We just kind of remember and we say, well, that was weird.
It's a weird situation.
And we write it off and forget about it.
So you shared with me and my listeners and at our group that you have had one of these 10 years ago. So tell us a little bit more about it.
I did.
And the after effect.
It was extraordinarily unusual. I went to a meeting, and it was a large men's meeting, and I came in late. And I was sitting on the left-hand side of the auditorium where there was almost no one because that's where the seats were available. And there was hardly anybody in front of me and somebody way in the back behind me, a good ways back. And at the end of the meeting, they sing a hymn. This was a Bible study fellowship program. And during the singing of the hymn, all of a sudden felt as if I was isolated from everyone else by what felt like a wall, but it wasn't a wall because I could see through it. And then I noticed that there was someone standing in the aisle beside me. I was sitting on an aisle seat. No one stands in the aisle. You just don't do that. You sit in a seat or you stand up by your seat. But even worse, it was a woman. Now, this was a men's group, mm-hmm. not a woman's group, and it was not mixed at that time. And when I looked over to see who it was, I saw that it was my grandmother.
Oh.
And she had been dead since 1956. And so I just about lost it at that point. I didn't know what to think about that. And her lips were moving. She wasn't talking to me, but she was singing along with the hymn. Now, she was a missionary in India for 40 years, and she was the music person, so it was a natural thing for her to be doing if I were going to see her. But I had to fight to keep it together at that point. Make it worse, I felt like there was a hand on my left shoulder, giving me sort of an attaboy squeeze. Now, there was no way I was turning around to look and see who that might be, because I knew that if I did and I saw somebody I recognized like my grandmother or like a grandfather or whoever that was, I would have lost it right then. And then all of a sudden, I'm 20 or 30 feet up in the air, or feel like I am, but I'm aware that I'm still standing here, that my grandmother's still standing in the aisle, but I'm up here surrounded by a beautiful, bright light that just exudes love, joy, and peace. And I've never experienced anything like that before. It was so comforting, and I thought to myself, I said, well, gosh, I guess this is what it feels like to die, and I'm fixing to die. And, wow, this is really nice. And when I thought about that, I thought, oh, my goodness, I can't make a decision like this. This is not right because I have a wife and two young daughters at home, and there's just no way that I can make a decision to stay here because I wanted to stay. It was so nice. And the minute I made that decision, it was over with. Grandmother was gone. The thing around me was gone. I was no longer in the air. I'm back in my seat, totally confused, not knowing what to say. And I've got to leave and go lead a discussion group.
Whoa.
Now for an hour. I think, well, am I going to tell the discussion group about this or not? I said, no way, no way. I had to make sense out of it myself. It took me almost a week before I could talk to my wife about it because I was still trying to digest what in the world had happened. It was an amazing experience.
So you've written all this out and shared it?
Oh, yeah, I've written it all out, and I've shared it with a number of people. I've shared it with Dr. Grayson at the University of Virginia. He wanted a copy. And then my favorite theologian is N.T. Wright, and he's one of the best in the world. And I emailed him and told him about it and asked him if he'd seen anybody with NDEs. And he said no, but he said, do you have a narrative? And I said, yes, I do. He said, please send it. So I did. And believe it or not, the next day I get an email. I couldn't believe this. I get an email from this guy, and he says, you're not going to believe this, but I got your report. I read it. And the very next day, into my office comes someone who had a near-death experience and wanted to talk about it.
That was perfect timing, but it might have been something that triggered it, right?
Oh, it was wonderful, yeah.
That triggered that individual to make that decision. So this theologian never had one. Now he has two.
Oh, he's strong. He is really good.
Had two. So do you feel that everyone, if they've had this experience, should definitely tell someone?
I think they should. They need to be selective. It helps to share. And people need to know that these things exist. But I do think you need to be careful who you talk with. Dr. Grayson has a very interesting way of approaching this when someone comes to him. He says, first of all, what was the context in which this took place? In other words, were you at a meeting like I was, or were you on the operating table and they had your heart cut open and you had a cardiac arrest? And what was the situation? And then he says, well, what was the last thing you remember before you blacked out?
Okay.
And they talk about that. And then he says, well, what was the first thing you remember when you woke up? And they talk about that. And then he slips in and says, do you remember anything that occurred in between? And that's when it comes out. That's when all the details start flowing out.
The details of that as well.
Then the last question is, did anything unusual happen during your experience?
And some of these could last, timing-wise, you don't know how long you're in that experience?
Time disappears. That's one of the other characteristics about near-death experience, is you just have no sense of time whatsoever.
But you, in your situation, you knew it didn't last more than a day.
Well, you're talking about the experience. Mm-hmm. My experience only lasted a few minutes. All that went on very quickly in a few minutes. But time, I wasn't aware of the time at all. It seemed like there was a lot going on, but it happened very quickly.
So
time disappeared, the sensation of time.
Do you think that an individual out there might have had one of these experiences should definitely tell their pastor, their priest, et cetera?
I think they should tell the person they're the most comfortable with, that they can talk with. and then go from there. Okay. Because you need to have a voice on the other end of this conversation that understands you and won't misjudge you, and someone they feel comfortable with. So and that might be their priest or their pastor or their physician, but it might just well be their best friend. You know, that's where you would start.
And you know, and some of these, hopefully those people that have had these have written down and jogged this, and, you know, that young man that luckily came out in piecemeal, he had, eventually everything was written down for him to write the book about it. So even though it was minute time over a period of months and years, luckily it was all recorded, so more and more people could feel that understanding.
Right, yeah, you're talking about the Burpo boy?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the correlation with the little Akian Kramanik, who is the artist, that just happened to come together, and that was perfect.
That was perfect. Well, thank you, Dr. Boggs. This was fascinating. I hope my listeners out there got a little bit of information about this. I'm sure a lot of people are going to be talking about it. Hopefully their family and friends will share if they've had some of these near-death experiences as well. So what's any final thoughts?
No, just if you have one, just find a friend and have a conversation.
Well, thank you again for joining us today.
Okay.
Remember to tell your friends to listen to our show next Saturday morning for another show that could benefit them or their loved ones. Don't forget to pick up your personal copy of The Best of Times in one of our 270 distribution locations. May God bless you and your family. God bless America. Have a great day and a great weekend. Thank you again for listening to our show. Remember, today is Election Day, so go out and vote. It's important. Your vote does count. I'm Gary Kaligas, wishing you and yours the best of times both today and every day. Have a great day.